Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
One in the books, two to go, plenty more show. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel till 4 p.m. right here on the mighty 97.5 FM. As we continue to roll on,
you guys scared me. I had no idea what you were doing with that.
Seem to be loving the fact that we are not shying away. We're just talking in the break about talking baseball. We both love baseball. We're going to get Nick hooked on baseball because Nick was already on record as saying, I love the Astros. When they're done, I really don't have a whole lot of fun watching baseball. And we're going to turn them around.
And good luck trying to get me hooked on college basketball. But
that's going to be the goal.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean,
gonna be the goal.
I know it's my job.
Well, Joel's gonna be final four Joel's time. I mean, by March Madness,
I'll be. Listen, I'll watch the games, and I think, in fact, I think someone was asking the other day, "Are we going to be on during the tournament?" I think our show might be preempted by.
I've talked to the guys here. This is the first time in my life that I can actually say I might have information before you guys in the station. But when I talked to the people here, they were working on which could be a really cool thing for us, but an internet show. Every day when the games preempt our shows, and then they said we can cuss and say whatever we want while we're on the shows, and we might even do them from a remote, like from sports bars where games are going on. That might be just a little too much fun.
I might get filthy.
Yeah, you're definitely going to get filthy.
Do you understand how hard it is for me on a day in and day out?
Oh, I have a lot of that too.
Not to curse,
and then when I, you know, so at night because my wife does,
and in 4 years I've only done it once. One time, in 4 years.
That you know of. There's been a couple that Nick's bailed you out on.
No.
Oh, are you talking about the one you did like with me on this show, right? Yeah. It wasn't on game day, was it?
No. That was the only time I've ever had to be dumped.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw you blush, too. Your face turned so red, dude.
Yeah. I was very unprofessional. I don't
and then
that.
He didn't want to be alone. Like so, like, for the next 3 weeks, he was monitoring everything I said, going, oh, did you?
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm trying to get you to cuss.
Yeah. But I'm with you. And the thing that's crazy to me is, so at night, I got to shift the cars in our driveway once my wife goes to bed because she's got to leave. So I make sure the car's right by the back door. So
we have like a single lane driveway?
Yeah.
Oh, and she gets home. Okay.
So
yeah.
I always juggle them at the end of the day, and I make sure her car is right next to the back door. So it's just like as quick and easy as possible because her schedule sucks. And every time I get in her car, she's got Stern on or satellite radio or even like Sandra Bernhard. And they're just dropping bombs and stuff. Yeah. And I go, ooh, that would be fun. Yeah. Just to not worry about it. Because, yeah, you do. You have to pad the brakes sometimes.
I would probably be over the top with it because that's how I am on stage. Like, I can do 30 minutes completely clean. Like, never curse.
Like your boy Cal?
For 30 minutes. Yeah, I could do that. No problem. I've done it before. I've done corporate gigs and never cuss. But if I start getting that groove, if I start feeling it, if I'm starting to just really just be myself, I'm filthy. Like, I'll say the F word a lot. And so I have to really be, and same thing on here. Like if on air, if I'm like having fun with you guys and I have to really think about the words that I say because it could go badly quickly.
For sure.
I don't like to give Bill Simmons too much credit, but I was listening to his podcast.
Yeah.
At least someone does.
And Kevin Durant was on and he was swearing and it just felt so natural to him.
Yeah.
And I wish we could do that here too, but.
Yeah, it would be
good. It's one of the things I appreciated.
I think players love it. I think that they still pad it because their marketing people and otherwise are saying, look, if you want endorsement deals and whatever, and they hear you drop an MF or something like that. I mean, look, that whole line has been crossed. I don't know if you guys heard about the Under Armour story with Steph Curry. But Steph Curry, him and Brady are the two big Under Armour guys. And the president and CEO of Under Armour decided to say a few pro-Trump things. And Curry basically had to come back and say, look, I don't care how lucrative it is. I'm not afraid to pull the plug on any deal if I don't agree with and line up with the people making decisions. And then it was a whole, you know, PR spin to try and make it right again.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, he did look at his bank account too. But, yeah, I mean, it's tricky, man, because the players would love. I can't tell you how many times over the years, because, you know, the players have a comfort level when I used to do all the interviews, it would just be one-on-ones and I'd grab them at practice or I'd grab them in the locker room when no one else was around. And a couple times, you know, several times, they'd get so comfortable and they'd just drop an S-bomb or an F-bomb and I'm like, don't worry, we can edit that out. But they can't do that with the regular media. And I think if they got too comfortable, you might run the risk of, like, for a James Harden that's got everything from gummy beards to the Adidas deal to all the different things he's got going. And he drops one or two... lines that kind of push the envelope, and that envelope with the check in it might not be coming.
Gummy beards.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
It's crazy. But that just shows you his popularity.
Yeah, that's true.
He's blowing up.
You don't realize how big he is of a star.
Nationwide.
Until you get outside of Houston. Because you already, you know, I mean, they're going to get the love locally. But, yeah, he's
I don't know who deserves credit for that, but that's a marketing genius.
Man.
Gummy beards?
Yeah.
I can't believe they just thought of that.
Well, and then they went, and of course, I think you can just blame me, because I think because of me, they didn't show the love to this station. To as part of the promotion, they gave away like a backboard with the gummy beard on it and a couple of basketballs with the gummy beard and packs and packs of the gummy beards. But, yeah, I mean, look, he's blowing up. And the thing is that when I was still working in the league and there was, you know, I was kind of in a bubble. Because I thought, that, you know, I loved and lived and died everything with the Rockets. And then I'd hear when we would sit down prior to games, we'd sit down with the radio teams from other teams and say, hey, tell us what to look for. Tell us what you think. What do you see on our team that we don't see or maybe we don't? And everyone hated him. And everyone, and so I started asking the question, like when we'd start talking, and my first thing on my mind would be, who's the most hated team that you guys play? And who's the most hated player and why? Blake Griffin and the Clippers were like one for most West Conference teams for like the first several years. And they said the tables had turned to where they felt like everyone from Portland to Golden State to even Sacramento was saying, we hate the Rockets and we hate James Harden. I'm like, why? I don't get it. But it's kind of like JJ doing all the commercials and everything. Yeah. And the fact that in Houston you love him and everybody else is sick and tired of seeing him. But they really had a disdain for James. And I think that's gone away this year because of the fact that he is – putting up these phenomenal numbers and carrying this team, I said phenomenal numbers, and carrying this team on his shoulders most nights, it's changed a lot of people. At least the common, just the casual fan, I believe, is more positive James Harden than they've been ever.
Tater's going to tate, man. You know, you get to that mountaintop and you're always going to have people that don't like you.
Well, let's also say the mountaintop.
Except us.
The individual
like everyone
mountaintop.
Loves us individually and as a show.
With the exception of... A few choice people.
A couple texts. Did flowers and Sherry's berries thanks to you guys. I'm very, nice. Very well. I was very, very well rewarded. That means sexy time.
Yeah, probably a little too much detail
Someone
there.
Someone got some sexy time.
Before I throw up in the back of my mouth, we'll cut it off there.
It was a great night is what they ended it with. Congratulations on your sex time, sir.
Yeah.
Or ma'am. It may have been ma'am. You don't know.
We live in
a whole new world, guys.
Nope.
It could have been a woman getting
According
a man.
To Trey and most of his ammunition yesterday, it could have been man in hand.
Oh.
You never know.
Somebody wanted to know who's going to play first, Gurriel and who's in right. That's absolutely correct. Gurriel is your starting first baseman, and right field is J.J. Redick.
J.J. Redick, is he going to shoot threes too?
Oh, not J.J. Redick.
Josh's brother Redick. Might come in, who's not his brother, but yeah, it might happen.
I really did drop a J.J. Redick.
But we're
Redick,
still talking baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, Redick's in right, and Aoki's in left. And then
people don't even know Aoki.
Yeah,
that's the crazy thing.
Yeah, and you'll probably see Beltran fill in left. I would have thought right field because that was his natural position, mm-hmm. but he's older. He didn't got the wheels, so you'll probably see something to the effect of like that second outfield would be Beltran in left, Mariznick in center, and move Springer over to right if you're mm-hmm. resting Redick or what have you. And yeah, first base they have Gurriel, and then they have like Gonzalez and Reed and White. I don't think that's gonna happen.
I think Reed and White got their big break last year, and I think now it's going to be only in emergency situations because of who they have and because that major league roster seems to be pretty much locked up.
Yeah, and they also have Colin Moran at first, which that remains to be seen. But Bregman and Gurriel is your first and backup at third base, your starter and backup, I should say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then McCann Gattis is your catcher, so that's what it's looking
your
like.
Your battery mates, yes.
Yep.
And I think, look, you know, the bullpen, for as good as they were for a year and a half, they really fell off the second part of last year. I thought you see them kind of shuffle the deck a little bit because of that. But they still have so many young arms that can mm-hmm. fill up so many different roles. I hope that they don't get away from that, because part of the beauty of what they had was whether a starter just didn't have it or if they wanted to just get to the bull, you know, if they before they got to the late inning guys, they had guys that did a great job of bridging the from the bullpen to getting the deep bullpen from the starters. And I think that they've got to stick with that. AJ's got to stick with that. Not that he needs to have a quick hook, but you have enough depth now in your pitching staff that if a guy just doesn't have it where he's getting knocked around early. Don't make it a slugfest if you don't have to. You can still go to your guys, your middle, your long relief guys, your middle relief guys are going to do the job, and that's something that he's got to feel really good about.
If I were making one prediction in a negative light for the Astros, I have a feeling, or just kind of looking at tendencies, I really think this might be a down year for Luke Gregerson. I feel like this might be where you see Harris kind of leapfrog into that setup role and stay there with Giles as your closer. But Gregerson worries me a little bit. He's getting up there in age. He'll be 32, 33 this year. His numbers are starting to fall off a little bit year in and year out. You know, when you consider from 2011 to 2014, he had a sub-3 ERA, and he had almost a 3.3 last year. He's trending down. So that scares me a little bit. But otherwise, yeah, I think the bullpen will be pretty solid. Plus, at the front of that bullpen, they've got a lot of young, live arms, and they've added some guys who can bring some heat, which is what they really need.
I just think, you know what, if Fister wasn't your MVP last year from a pitching staff performance-wise that kept you in a lot of games, and he stepped up, I just think Chris Devinsky was phenomenal.
Yep.
He was fantastic, because if you needed him as a spot starter or a long relief guy or a short relief guy, wherever you called his number, he stepped up, and I think he's a guy that I look to in terms of from a bridge guy to their – he's kind of like their Mr. Fix-It. He's their Mr. Goodwrench. But if he can continue to do that stuff
– he's the Marwin of the pitching staff.
Yeah, I think that'll be great as well. So we're looking forward to and are excited to watch Astros baseball. Maybe we'll do something like a field trip or two where we all go and people can join us.
Yeah,
and
we can get some listeners out there.
Sit in a section and hang out and talk baseball while we watch baseball.
No one talk to me.
Well, I'll throw crap at you. See, I almost did it right there. I almost XM radioed you right there. I was like, I'll throw stuff at you during the game. But I love popcorn too much to waste it on you. I'll tell you that. All right, we got plenty more show to go, and we keep on rolling along. We've got lots of stories on the docket, and maybe even a dock itch if we scratch it.
Uh-oh.
So we've got plenty more to talk about. ESPN 97.5.
Ooh, crazy is what they say.
ESPN 97.5.
With GoToMeeting, you can really connect with your team members anywhere.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for video conferencing in. Lou, have the suppliers give... Okay. Marta, when do the designers...
Started yesterday.
Perfect. Rodney, how are
they... Showed them the first round earlier. We're good.
That's great. You know what, Tom...
Don't worry. We'll show it to the team in Dallas before sending it to accounting.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay.
When you connect better, everything comes together. GoToMeeting. Try it free at GoToMeeting.com.
Tile meets style. Right now at the Home Depot. We have a vast selection of mosaic tiles. They start at just $4.99 each and offer infinite possibilities for updating your kitchen or bathroom. But don't stop there. Colorful mosaic tile can make a huge impact inside and out, from the front hallway to the back porch, even as an alternative to a traditional area rug. Reimagine your space with decorative mosaic tile, starting at just $4.99 each at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, Nick, till 4 p.m., fast becoming the favorite show of big baseball fans in the city of Houston, Texas, getting tons of tweets about the fact that we are willing to talk baseball just like we are willing to talk basketball. We're willing to talk about anything. You know, and we just want to be your show. And so if we can, you know, tailor make some things that make you happy, hey, within reason, and some of you are going to get complete no's right off the get-go, and you know who you are. But for the majority and the 99.9% of you, we want to hear from you. And if there's things you want to talk about and have fun with, we'll partake in most cases. Barry is more willing than most. So that's always fun.
What?
Within reason.
Okay.
This is not satellite. I don't know if you guys caught this, and Barry, I'm sorry because this one's not in your wheelhouse, as you said, but at the same time, there's another one coming that's not in my wheelhouse.
I'm a team player. Let's do it.
That's meat right out in the middle of the plate for you guys. So last night, Michigan State gets a big win. Michigan State, a perennial Final Four team.
Yeah, no doubt.
Tom, see, there you go. Tom Izzo, Hall of Fame coaching resume, you know, big time. Done a lot
very
of things.
Respected.
Well, yeah, highly respected.
Bit of an a-hole.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I've got friends.
Not very well liked.
I've got friends, again.
I've heard both. I've heard him. I've definitely
you
heard
do realize what he's doing right now, Nick, right?
What?
He's just chiming in
No, that's true. No, I've heard that dude is an a-hole. Like, not a well-liked guy.
Yeah, I knew he wasn't being facetious.
He's nice. Loved at the university.
Well,
and
of course.
And he's loved by ex-players. I've got friends that...
John Stockton was loved by the Jazz fans.
What about Gonzaga?
That doesn't make him like... Yeah, but, I mean, to my point...
What about Gonzaga? His son went there, too.
A lot of people
he was a zag.
Think that dude's a D-bag.
I haven't heard that.
I think there's a little bit of a D-bag in every big college basketball coach, honestly.
So here's and I can agree with that, right? But here's the fine line. Because of the fact, it's like the whole Charles Barkley situation. The fans want Charles to be critical of everybody, and then the players are going to get sensitive when he's critical of them, and then there's like a line in the sand. So it's kind of gotten to that point in college basketball because there's a guy named Dan Dockich, if you're not familiar. He's a ESPN analyst on games and in studio. He's a former Indiana University player and coach. He now has a radio show in Indianapolis. He's very opinionated. He's come out and been very outspoken about Michigan State and their fans being whiny and critical of everything. And it just kind of happens that ESPN showed up in East Lansing to do a game a couple times in the last 2 weeks. And this is the kind of reception that Dan Dockich received, followed by the reason why from Coach Izzo.
We hate Dockich. We hate Dockich. Before I go into anything, I gotta tell you that, you know, I do a lot of work to try to somewhat control the Izzo. And if there's things not being said, I, you know, email them, I talk to them, I catch hell both ways. If too much is being said, if not enough's being said. But I gotta be honest with you, I was kind of getting upset at the chance of Dockich. Until I got in the locker room and I asked, what was that all about? And somebody read me his tweets. The social media. And if I would have known that before the game, I would embarrass myself almost as much as he embarrassed himself. And I would have led the chance. Because calling us whiners and that is kind of unprofessional. Classy broadcasters. And George Blah and everybody else wouldn't even think to do something like that on TV. But saying our students couldn't get in there, and he's doing games for Michigan when his son's there, that is a disappointment, and that is ridiculous. And I think it's funny because I got no respect for him for that. And I'm going to publicly say it. You can tweet it. You can read it. You can do whatever you want with it. But Twitter got him in trouble. And he earned it, and I'm surprised ESPN would let somebody say something like that that works for him. So that's off my chest now. Another one for Twitter, you know? I mean, another one for Twitter. But Danny owes our fans and our students an apology.
It'll be interesting to see if it comes because of the fact that, you know, Charles has been very quick in saying, I'm not apologizing for anything. Stephen A. said to us on Radio Row, look, when it's a personal friend of yours, you kind of owe it to them sometimes. And I almost disagreed with that at the time, and I wasn't going to get him all fired up. But so in case you didn't get the audio, the fan section, the student section at Michigan State games is called the Izzone for obvious reasons. And then Dockich's son is a walk-on that got a scholarship this year at Michigan. And so he was very big on a game earlier this year and, you know, as a proud father, just gloating on his son and getting a scholarship and everything else. But it's a fine line. And as we know, especially when you're working and you're, and also worth noting, Izzo hates social media. And he's been highly critical.
That was obvious.
So that was those little pot shots on the side because he's like Van Gundy and the old school guys. They don't want anything to do with social media. But it's one thing to say, you know, your fans are a little whiny. I mean, I think any team that goes on a road game will be the first to say and be critical of the team you're playing against if their fans go over the top a little bit. But yeah, to say when you start breaking it down to say that students at Michigan State aren't going to get in at another university and things like that, that's uncalled for.
Yeah.
Well, because you're supposed to be.
I mean,
you're representing a national network, so you have no bias. And to say, oh, Michigan State students can't get, you know, wish they could get in at so-and-so. That's just, you don't, like so if you're, so let's say.
Okay, now what if one of us said that? Is it any different? Like I like the things I make, the jokes I make about the Cowboys, Cowboy fans or whatever. Is that
I think it's much different.
Am I supposed to be unbiased?
No,
everyone knows
I think,
I'm a Texans fan.
Right, but I'm saying from an audience standpoint, from a viewership or listenership in this case, if we were doing a national radio show,
okay,
and you made comments like that, I would say that, yeah, I think you need to pad the brakes there because of the fact that we need to be more generalized and respectful because we're not doing a Houston-based show for Houston sports fans. We're doing a nationwide show where there are fans from every fan base.
What's different than Barkley hating on the Rockets because he has a personal beef with the Rockets? What's the difference?
Because he still tries to mask it to some degree, and there's now...
No,
and especially
he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
No,
especially this year.
This
year, he has been
He's been
supportive of the Rockets and James Harden. If you've watched any of his telecasts in the studio, he has been so pro James Harden for MVP and so much better in terms of
because
pro
he's trying
Rockets.
To make up for the fact that he's been labeled a Rocket hater because of personal interest.
I don't
believe.
I can
for a
honestly tell
that
you that that doesn't mean anything in terms of if he feels like he doesn't know anybody. Anything.
He was reprimanded and told he needed to apologize for the things he said.
No,
in
he
the
was
past
told
about
to apologize because of the fact that he got into a very personal, heated back and forth with the CEO and the general manager of the Rockets.
Yeah,
it had nothing
that
to
made
do
it personal.
With. Right, they did it. They did it first, because Charles made a statement about Game 3 in the series with Golden State, and the CEO decided to tell him take a personal shot at him, in which Charles started to respond and challenge him, and then it got personal, and that's when he had to apologize. But in terms, he's never backed off in terms of he's going to be honest. And yes, I do agree with you too that there is a little vendetta that goes with it when he gives a little extra oomph in the past to the Rockets. But this year, to his credit, which I was shocked by him doing, but he has been very pro James Harden for MVP, and he's been very, very pro Rockets in terms of being a top three team that has earned it, that's playing well. But I think when you're on that platform, whether it be TNT or ESPN or any, when you're on a national platform, I think you have to toe a different line. I think you got to be more careful.
I think when you're calling a game and you're obviously one-sided, the one that comes to mind for me was always listening to Dan Dierdorf call an Oilers game. For some reason, it just felt like Dan Dierdorf hated the Oilers, right?
The way I feel like Troy and Joe hate the Packers.
Yeah. And so you expect someone calling the game to call it down the middle, unless you're tuning into that team's broadcast, which I'm okay with.
But if you're calling the game, that's the play-by-play guy and the analyst. And I think that's my point. You have to expect the same out of the analyst, that you're going to be fair yet honest. If a guy sucks that night, you're going to say, look, the guy for Syracuse the other night, Nick and I were talking about this in these games, the kid that's one of their leading scorers was like 2 for 15, and he kept shooting. And they were like, he's just awful tonight.
See, I think the difference is, like, when you look at the Tom Izzo situation is, I think he was more concerned about the shots being taken by Dakich on Twitter towards his players or towards the fan base.
And I think he could take the players. I think it's the fans. I think he thinks he crossed the line because he went too far by attacking the fans.
Right. And if you remember, I don't know if you guys remember, but Colin Cowherd called Clemson a fraud. And Steve Smith came on the show and grilled him for it because he said these guys are kids. They're adults, but they're kids. They're 18, 19, 20. So you got to be a little bit more sensitive as to what you say to them and the fan base, because honestly, the fan base, a lot of them are students. But that would be my – I think in his particular case, Dakich, he called them whiny. So it's not the worst thing in the world.
But then took it a step too far by saying, and these kids couldn't get into another unit, a different
That's
university.
That's probably a little far. Again, they're kids, so you got to watch what you say. But I think
everyone's so sensitive. That's nothing. Like, the fact that seems like nothing to me.
As
but
an
to
18,
a lot of people, it's something.
Kid,
yeah, it's something. And if you're, and not just the kid
just
itself, but if the parents hear that, the parents of the students at Michigan State get offended. But like I said, and Nick,
God,
you've done network and local shows. You know that there's a different line that you toe when you're doing national versus when you're doing just Houston-based radio or TV or otherwise.
I'll say this. I think the whiny comments, it might bother me. Perhaps I'm being a little sensitive. But if you called me a fraud the way Cowherd did, I think that would definitely bother me. And Cowherd got a lot of heat for it.
See, and I think the whiny comments, that's to be understood. To your point, Barry, I think that you can say, look, it's expected if you're going in as the road team to criticize their fans and everything, you know, if when you hear things critical of your team. But when you're going in as a representative of a national network with supposedly no biases, I think that's when it changes.
Yeah, so I get that part, like the part about him being biased because his son went to Michigan.
He's an Indiana guy, so he's got two teams in the same conference.
I get that part of it. You're letting your bias show, but calling their fans whiny.
I'm even okay with that.
They couldn't get into Michigan or whatever.
I think that's the problem.
Who cares? Like, that's nothing.
I know it's rhetorical, but when you ask who cares, we obviously see that a lot more people care.
Yeah, but it's one guy's opinion. It'd be like getting upset every time Stephen A. Smith opens his mouth. It's the same thing like when, I sit here and I make fun of tons of teams and fan bases. 9 times out of 10, that's all it is. It's just jokes and making fun. And whether he meant it or not, what does it matter?
To a lot of people, it obviously matters. Because that's what I'm saying.
Because is it the truth? Does the truth hurt? Is it that they really couldn't get into Michigan and that's why they're pissed about it? Because otherwise, if you chose to go to Michigan State, I would laugh it off. But what I'd be mad about is he can't be objective. That would be my thing. Not the fact that he said something nasty about our school. My point would be, why are you having a guy on that can't be objective about the teams on the court? That, to me, is the bigger foul here than him, whatever words he said about the student body.
Let us know what you think. Everybody's got an opinion. It's like we said, everybody's got opinions are like buttholes. Everybody's got one. Some just stink. So we can get back to that. We can get to a lot more. We've got plenty more show to go as we hit the halftime.
Did you just say my opinion?
I didn't say yours did. I just said in general.
Joe's is mad because I got the last word this time.
You want to chime in?
For once, it's
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Or hit us up on Twitter.
I'll have you know my b-hole don't stink.
And we're here till 4, ESPN 97.5. I tried to give him the last word, but I got to give the bump out.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
All right, Joel, Nick, Barry, and as promised, certain things, that's why we have such a diverse bunch here. Certain things are in one of our wheelhouses or all of our wheelhouses, and certain things are not. And I know, and I have questions for you guys as well, on something that's not in my forte of expertise, which would be UFC and or MMA, and I always defer to you guys as the experts. But now, the whole thing that we didn't get to yesterday, but we were going to mention, was that sources were saying that the McGregor-Mayweather battle was getting closer and closer to happening, and that after meetings this weekend, that it looked like it was going to be. And then Dana White comes out and says that's not the case. I want to get your guys' thoughts, and then I also want to throw the question out to you guys: how are they going to dictate a format that's fair for both guys? Because obviously Mayweather is the better boxer, but McGregor is a much better overall fighter.
Well, it was going to be a boxing match. It was going to be just boxing.
Yeah, and you guys think that McGregor
no takedowns, no ground.
Could McGregor hold his own in just boxing?
No way.
I didn't think so either.
No way.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real struggle, and I think that's the reason why Floyd is, if he is going to entertain this fight, like it's really going to happen. I was at one point. For the longest time, I said it's never going to happen.
It's not.
Some pretty sick money. Man, it could happen.
It's crazy how interested. To me, to make a fight, you have to get the two fighters super interested in it. And I feel like they're both kind of interested in it. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
I think financially they're interested. But my thing is look at what happened when they finally got Mayweather-Pacquiao and both guys were kind of more on the downside. It was a huge disappointment.
This is a fight that was never – this was a fight to drum up interest and talk about the sports and make these guys – keep these guys relevant. And this is not a fight that was ever going to happen. I don't believe that for 1 minute. I don't think Dana White would have let it happen. And if you believe what people are saying, that these guys were close on the money, that's great. But that doesn't mean that everything else is in place just because these guys can agree on how to split the purse. Dana White has Conor McGregor under contract, and Dana White's not going to let him go in there and just get humiliated and ruin the reputation that he's built up to make him this invincible Conor McGregor.
Exactly.
And then look like an idiot in a boxing ring because Floyd Mayweather flurries a few punches and then plays defense and backs up, and McGregor's chasing the whole time and probably gets caught. I don't think this was ever going to happen, but it's great to talk about. It's great for publicity for boxing and MMA, and specifically the UFC to a certain degree. Dana White's not going to let this deal go through.
We totally expected him to shoot it down. And it, to me, it would have only been true if it came from the UFC or from Dana White.
That's the key.
Because if it didn't come from them, then I knew it was just to stir things up. But it was a UK publication. I believe it was The Sun that initially stirred things up and started everything. And a lot of people ran with it, especially you know, people on terrestrial radio networks and TV, because people who are not as educated on the sport are definitely going to push that number for sure. Because it just brings clicks. It brings, and that's not to say that we shouldn't have talked about it. I think we should mention it. I'm just saying it's definitely something that the media outside the MMA world are interested in.
You can always tell people that don't know, and I'm not talking about you, Joel, but you can always tell people. You can always tell people in radio and in print and on websites and blogs and even TV that don't know the intricacies of MMA, because this is all they can really talk about or cling to, is a super fight between a boxer. And I mean, you know, people always brought up Rousey and Mayweather, and then Rousey can't even beat half the women in the UFC anymore. And so it's one of those things where you'll see fringe, you know, media guys kind of cling to that stuff, but that's not what's going to really happen. I mean, hell, there were times in MMA in the last, you know, 7 years that everyone wanted a GSP Anderson Silva fight, and that was never going to happen.
I know that's George St-Pierre.
Why would you want one of those guys to be knocked off their pedestal by the other? Like, there's no benefit of that until, like you said with Mayweather Pacquiao, until they're both start to decline, and then it doesn't matter as much, and then it's just a money grab. But the UFC was never going to let those guys, they're never going to let Conor McGregor get knocked off that pedestal either. He's going to have to do it himself in the cage, not in a boxing
ring. I think to what you were saying, and take it a step further, it wasn't just, it seems to me this was all kind of bravado that got too far down the line. Like, it was all, like, everybody, you know, saying, even when Rousey got into it with Floyd Mayweather back in the, you just expected this was just fodder and bravado between people that get a lot of benefit out of that kind of thing and marketing themselves. But then when it actually got down to the reality, my question was, I would love to see Mayweather have to do more than box.
Yeah,
I think that would have been intriguing and interesting.
Well, the problem is, it wouldn't have been. It would have been terrible. It would have been James Toney and
Randy Couture
all over again.
It was a terrible fight.
It was a horrible fight. No one, I think everyone was interested. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you saw
it. It's got to live up to the billing a little
bit. Dude, it's like watching a man fight a toddler once you go to the ground. A boxer doesn't know. It's like literally you fighting a grappler. Like, you don't know anything about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so no one wants to see that. And it's a huge disadvantage for the boxer, because that's all they do is box. So it was never going to happen that way. This was either going to be a boxing match or nothing.
It was totally a predictable fight, because James Toney, I mean, he was way past his prime, but he was a guy that's still respected, a guy that was still healthy enough to throw a big punch. And I knew Couture was not going to stand and trade punches with that guy.
No.
It took what? That fight was like 5-6 years ago, but it was like
15-30 seconds at the most before it went to the ground.
And it's also a letdown,
it was
too, which hurts future pay-per-view. When you get a Pacquiao Mayweather that everybody wanted to see when they were in their prime, and by the time you get it, the fight itself is such a letdown that you're like, eh. And now you don't care about a rematch, and now you're going to question whether you spend the money the next time on the next time Mayweather fights or Pacquiao fights, or maybe even two other really hyped fights. But that's why I said it was going to be so hard to live up to and make it fair for either side that I questioned it, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on it. Yeah.
And so, somebody texted me, I like when Dana White said that Manny and Floyd are in the same sport, and we saw how long that took. Amen, man. I mean, these are great talk for sports talk radio and bloggers and everything, but these don't just happen. There's too many egos, there's too much money, and there's too much at stake, even between Pacquiao and Mayweather, for stuff like this to just happen overnight.
Yeah, I mean, look, and to your point, too, on fringe media people, and the fact that they try and look like that they're intelligent, they also are the ones that steal their stats off of Twitter instead of giving real stats that happen during real games by checking simple things like the internet and their computers. But they still have jobs, and they continue to use them.
I don't predict everything right, but I totally predicted that Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. I knew it was going to play out
the way it did. It did suck.
But the one thing that's better about a potential fight between Floyd and Conor is that it's going to end. It's going to end, probably in a bad way for Conor, considering they're trying to shoot for a boxing fight.
Yes.
At least there'll be a finish, but it still won't be a good fight, in my opinion.
Nick missed what I said, though, and it wasn't directed towards him, but you got it.
No, I heard what you said, but...
Kind of.
I sense the pregnant pause.
You'll get it.
Yeah.
All right. We got much more show to get to.
Yeah. Okay.
We got much more show to get to, and we want you to be a part of it. 713-780-ESPN, or hit us up on Twitter. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, Nick, till 4 o'clock as we continue to roll on. You know, guys, now that we've both covered, all three of us have covered issues that are and are not maybe in our field of expertise, we might as well get to some stuff that we can all chime in on. Nick, you and I were talking yesterday in detail about the whole Terrell Owens situation again with the Hall of Fame, simply because of the fact that writers are now coming out and they're detailing and highlighting the what happened in that 9-hour meeting amongst the voters that had a vote for Hall of Fame, and then where the lobbying that took place, including James Lofton and Dan Fouts being in the room to try and give the point counterpoint pros and cons of everyone involved, including Terrell Owens. Now, a day later, stories come out to where the story won't die. Terrell Owens won, claiming that there are certain guys in the Hall of Fame, i.e. Chris Carter, who quote-unquote begged their way into the Hall of Fame, sounded something like this.
Now you look at where I am statistically, I've surpassed him. And what I heard, I mean, from a lot of guys, I mean, he begged his way into the Hall of Fame.
So that's Owens on Carter, and then Chris Carter responded to Terrell.
Are they punishing him right now?
I don't know that. I'm not in the room. So.
Okay, wait. He said last year that you begged your way into the Hall of Fame. Like, was that that was a slam against you, right?
Oh, I don't know if it's a slam. You have to ask him.
So well, should Terrell Owens be inducted in the Hall of Fame?
Of course. He's good enough to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's the third most touchdowns. Right.
Of course.
And, I mean, you weren't offended by his comments that you begged your way into the Hall of Fame? Or were you offended?
No, why should I be offended? I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. That's a good answer.
That's pretty good. That's pretty straightforward. Yeah. You know? Like, so would you shake his hand and welcome him in?
Absolutely. I'd welcome any Hall of Famer in, just like the Hall of Famers welcome me in.
So there's that. And Barry, we were talking about it yesterday. The one thing that came to mind was when you and I were on Radio Row, Isaac Bruce, who seemed a little on edge.
He scared me.
Yeah, he was a little...
If anyone was going to stab somebody on Radio Row, it was Isaac Bruce.
I'm not going to go that far, Dan Dockage. But what I would say is, though, he was on edge. He had an attitude about him. And the one thing that stuck with me was after all was said and done, I tried to be nice and just say, hey, look, I know the vote's coming up. Good luck with the Hall of Fame. And he goes, that's why I'm here, baby. That's why I'm here. And that's all I could think about with this Terrell Owens situation. And I threw it out to Nick. I'll throw it out to you. I think that if Terrell Owens was that guy that showed up on Radio Row and did all these interviews and tried to be like, hey, I'm here to help you guys out and join you guys and try and be happy-go-lucky, much as I hate to think that this would sway people, I think it's the kind of thing that might sway people on Terrell Owens. And that sucks because, again, the crux of our conversation yesterday was – what we've said all along, there's got to be not only more transparency in the vote, but more importantly, there has to be a definitive set of criteria in which you can say, is off-the-field stuff going to play into this?
So when you say sway people?
Because obviously from what we heard, and there's an article that we need to get you, but a guy named Vic Carucci wrote an article and basically stated what happened in that 9-hour meeting
in the room
amongst the voters.
Yeah.
And that people – it's like a political lobbying session where people were actually telling you why you should vote yay or nay on a certain player. And in the Terrell Owens situation, Lofton was very much saying Terrell should be in. Fouts was saying he shouldn't. They were both in the room, and they both had their time to speak. And they don't even have votes. And both are in the Hall of Fame. So the thing that we reverted back to was, look, when we say this in MVP voting, we say this in Hall of Fame voting, we say this across sports, but until we can get definitive criteria that everybody has to follow, and we can define whether off the field and outside the line stuff is going to matter, and then how
your,
much...
Your initial point, though, you were saying he could have done some media on Radio Row to potentially sway the decisions of the voters.
Or and, try to, yes.
And may it might have... It wouldn't have hurt, but it might have helped him get into the Hall of Fame. Isn't that what you were trying to
say? I think to some degree, yes.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I don't disagree with that.
No. But I think overall, too, I mean, look, we just got to the point where we said we have to get the criteria clearly stated. We have to get... Because Parcells came out and detailed all the different times he was such a distraction, such a pain in the ass. But at the end of the conversation, he basically said, but I still think he should be in.
Yeah.
So I just think across all of these different voting, and the one thing, the other thing that we mentioned was, if you get, you have to define who these voters are. And the voters have to have their finger on the pulse on a daily basis on the sport they're covering and what they're voting on. Because if a guy 20 years ago was the main beat writer for the number two paper in the country, but now he's covering minor league baseball and boxing for a website or doing a blog, why does he still have a vote? Because it's so important to the people involved and the people that follow the sport.
Why would you take it away, though?
Because you're not covering the sport on a daily basis anymore. You're not an expert. The reason why these votes are handed to these people are because you are a quote-unquote expert because you are covering that sport on a daily basis or a regular basis.
But you're taking away the experience that he's had covering the sport. Like, you're talking about players in the past that he covered. 20 years from now, if he's not been around the sport, I could see that.
But I'm saying, say a guy's now 60 years old. Uh-huh. He was 40 back in the day, and he was the beat writer for Team A.
Okay.
All right. Now he only has a blog. He's not covering the sport on a regular basis.
Well, okay, but now
in locker rooms, on the field. Okay. You know,
see,
following,
that's the difference. Yeah. But you can still watch the sport and be able to judge guys.
I mean, you can,
based on their performance.
But here's the other thing.
Field.
40 years ago, when he was covering the sport, there was no steroids, there was no social media, there was no all these other things to be judged on. But now, and in most cases, if that's that guy, Exhibit A, is 60 years old, he probably doesn't do social media, he doesn't follow it, and all he does is say this punk-ass kid doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame.
But to your point, and as a counterpoint, mm-hmm. I would much rather a guy who objectively only watches games based on performance as opposed to a beat writer who's in the locker room, who becomes friends with a guy, and wants to see his friend get in the Hall of Fame, whether he's worthy or not. I would much rather take the guy that strictly watches the games and bases his decisions off
of performance. I think most media guys still try to stay objective.
Absolutely not. Look at John McClain.
But at the same time,
Evan Bethea and Curly Culp wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame if it wasn't for John McClain, because John McClain sat in that room and lobbied for those guys.
And I understand if it was the guy that played.
Well, let me finish. The same way people lobbied against Terrell is the same way John McClain, for a good thing for Oilers fans, got those two, Bethea and Curly Culp, in.
But it's
so
obvious
it has a positive
Terrell's
if it's your fan
buddies,
base.
Wherever they are, can't outweigh all the people that have covered the sport on a regular basis for other teams. Because as much as John McClain may have done that, and this is a different, more polarizing case because of the fact that, you know, the guy Bethea and Culp weren't guys that were out there doing the kind of things Terrell Owens did, but you would still think objectively they'd get it right, because even if you have one or two beat writers that were his buddies, the masses that are voting, or the group as a whole, you're going to get objectivity. If I'm the beat writer in Cleveland and I never had him on my team and I'm not his buddy, but I covered the sport every day, to not only know how he played, but I also know that the feelings of the locker rooms and the people that had opinions, and that can factor in. I just think overall, well, you're still going to get more objectivity than a guy that used to cover the sport 20
know.
Years
to me,
ago.
It starts to devolve into politics where
it all
I'm
going
to vote for your bill and the pork that's in your bills, and you're going to vote for mine.
And
for
I don't disagree
pork
with that.
And that's essentially what, yeah, John McClain, I'll vote for Evan Bethea and Curly Culp, but when, you know, whatever Cleveland Brown comes up, you got to vote for them and do me that favor. And that's the, I mean, to me, it I don't know. It seems kind of it's sad that Terrell didn't get in, and I think it's an injustice. Mm-hmm. But again, for every case like that, there's guys like Elvin Bethea and Carly Cole who are getting in because of the same thing.
But two,
I do agree with you on that.
And the other thing that I'll say to you to your political point, which is right on, is this is why I don't think, and why when it immediately happened, I was asking you guys, why the hell are we meeting for 9 hours in a room because we have a vote and lobbying? Why? So it's, you know what? It's your vote. You vote the way you feel. Don't be swayed because some people in a room and two Hall of Famers decide to tell you to vote yay or nay. It's your vote. That shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. Ben Herbst on Twitter said, I hope I pronounced that right. Chris Carter used ESPN as his platform to get in. It was very apparent.
Chris Carter is also one of those guys, to what you guys said about Izzo, times 100.
I kind of think that's the reason why he didn't deny when
I agree.
Because people say, not only to the, to maybe not as much in the locker room, but people said to the media, to a man, he might be the biggest a-hole player that media has had to work with and cover in a long time. Yeah. Hey, at this point in the show, I want to tell you a little bit about one of our friends that isn't going to be judged politically. Mattress Mack is a Houston-owned and operated business that has been selling furniture to good Houstonians for like 20, 30 years and more. And you know what? He continues to do that, and he gets return business. Why? Because of customer service, service after the sale, because he has great prices, all American-made furniture, and he makes sure that he lives by the promises he makes. If you buy it today, you get it tonight. That's the way he does business. There's no backorder slips at Gallery Furniture because that's the way he wants to take care of his customers. Gallery Furniture has all American-made solid wood furniture, whether it's two-for-one recliners, whether it's American-made dining room tables and chairs, whether it's your living room set or all leather upholstered furniture. You're getting American made. You're getting top quality service after the sale, delivery when they say they're going to deliver it, and you're getting good prices. You're going to be back when you shop at Gallery Furniture. They have three locations in the Houston area, Grand Parkway between Sugar Land and Katy. They also have the Westheimer at Post Oak location right in the heart of the Galleria. And of course, the mainstay, I-45 North, exit Tidwell Parker. And as Max says, no back order slips. You buy today, you get it tonight, because Gallery really will save you money.